Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Happy Saturday. Welcome back into the Arrowhead Pride Best of the Week podcast. I'm host and audio producer of the Arrowhead Pride Podcast Network, Steven Serta. I'm going to start things off today with the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show. Pete Sweeney's got five things that he's observed about the Chiefs' defense so far in training camp. After that, we're going to follow things up with Out of Structure. Orlando Brown did report to Chiefs camp this week, as well as some training camp observations from Ron Kopp. After that, the Great British Chiefs Show has some training camp observations from across the pond. Then we're going to take a quick time out. When we get back, we'll catch up with Chiefs Coast to Coast. They went a little bit more in-depth to Orlando Brown showing up to training camp and what that means for the offensive line. And finally, we'll finish things up with Show and BK. Ron the Show Hughley was out this week, so myself and Brandon Kiley discussed the Chiefs cornerback room. And while there's optimism around the young players in that group, it could be a problem if this secondary has to start two rookie cornerbacks in week one of the NFL season. That's all coming up on today's Arrowhead Pride Best of the Week.
Back here on the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show, we're continuing with the 10 things I think about training camp. I've been up there each and every day. We've learned a lot so far. There's more to learn as we go. I'm now going to turn the page from offense to defense and give you the first defensive thing, I think. And if you've been listening to our training camp reports, which Steven Serta and I do every day, I've already alluded to this, and Steve made fun of me for it the other day, that I had to be negative. But I think it's been a good thing that cornerback Joshua Williams has looked the part. I think it's been not so good that you've been hearing less about Trent McDuffie, who the Chiefs traded up in the first round for. And I watched today in pads as Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who is a much taller receiver, really picked on Trent McDuffie. And I'm not like, if you talk about the worry scale, 1 to 10, I mean, I'm not at a 7. Am I in the 3 or 4-ish right now? I'm starting to get up there. And Williams is a good player, and he looks like he's going to be a contributor for this team. But I do have my worry about McDuffie, and especially just in the fact, and I've written about this on arrowheadpride.com, that the Chiefs took McDuffie, and then, you know, pick or two later, whatever it was, the Bills go and take Elam. And I just think these guys are going to be compared. And if McDuffie seems to be a bust, I think there's going to be a little bit of regret there. I'm getting too far ahead of myself. I had mentioned going into training camp that I thought McDuffie might struggle a little bit early on.
Right.
I think we're seeing that a little bit. How is he going to respond? The Chiefs picked him at that position for a reason. Great about Williams, about McDuffie.
You know, I think it's really hard to be a cornerback in the NFL. I've said this before.
Yeah.
You know, every play, the offensive player has the advantage over the defensive player.
Yeah.
And everybody expects every cornerback to be a shutdown corner. And if you give up one pass for a touchdown in a game, everybody thinks you're a bum. So I wouldn't want to be a cornerback in the NFL, and I especially wouldn't want to be a first-round cornerback in the NFL.
That's right,
because the expectations are so high. I think the worry scale that you're mentioning is about right. A little bit of worry, not a lot yet, not even up to average. But I also think that we knew right off the bat that McDuffie wasn't going to look really good until the pads came on.
Yeah,
and we're at day one of pads. Let's see what he does in a week from now and see if that changes the worry scale.
And sort of the point you were making about offensive linemen, right? Like when you're in a game setting, there's safety help and you're game planning against those opposing receivers. The Chiefs are going to play the Chicago Bears in their first preseason game. Like, let's see how he does it against receiver in another jersey. But I think the thing that I noticed is if he is going to start on day one, which is what a first round cornerback should do.
Right.
You're going to have these veteran quarterbacks that are looking for him, and he's going to be tested, and it's going to be early and often. And so that leads me to the second thing. I think the sooner Rashad Fenton takes the field, the better I'll feel, because they are missing him right now. I think having a cornerback with experience that really, I think, had a nice breakout season last year.
Yes, he did.
Gaining confidence will be key to have if McDuffie does struggle early on. McDuffie could have early struggles, be replaced in a lineup at a starting position, and then turn out to still be a pretty good corner down the line, right? Like that, could be a scenario that happens. If that's a scenario that's going to happen, you have to have a healthy cornerback. And we really haven't heard a lot about Rashad Fenton. The only thing that we've heard, the last thing we heard, is he was going to be ready for the start of training camp, which was not the case.
Right.
He's been on the PUP, and he looks fine. I've seen him on campus. I've seen him walking around. We see him working out off to the side with the training staff as these practices are ongoing. But, man, I really think this is a player that the Chiefs need back soon, and I hope he comes off the PUP sometime soon so we can be ready for the start of the regular season. And the longer this thing goes, you start to have questions about week one.
Well, I think that's exactly right. I'm a Fenton fan, so I'm all for him coming back. You know, it's like running backs. You can't have enough good cornerbacks. You know, if you have three good ones and one of them gets hurt, you know, you can get exposed really easily and really quickly in an NFL game against a good corner, a good quarterback. So I'm all for Fenton being back because I think it'll help us on a lot of different levels, including giving McDuffie the space to mess up.
Right.
You know, if we get to the regular season and he gets picked on too much, they can pull him back, put Fenton out there and let him season a little bit more.
If Spags can play,
first round player is going to eventually figure it out.
If Spags can play Daniel Sorensen over Juan Thornhill for 7 weeks, then he could play Rashad Fenton over Trent McDuffie.
Right? Yeah, right.
All right, we've gotten through seven. I have three more. Two more on defense, one more general about the team. Things I think as I've been watching training camp. I'm going to get some eye rolls here. You think I care? I don't care. You've made it to 47, minute 47 on the podcast. I think defensive end Frank Clark has put himself in the best possible position for this grand comeback story. He's now corrected his stomach issues by not drinking alcohol, which is amazing because he always seemingly deals with them in the worst possible parts of seasons and misses a handful of games here and there. So the stomach problems are gone. I know that everyone makes fun of skinny Frank. He looks about 250 from 262 last year, but he's moving well. And I think the thing that stuck out to me today is Andy Reid talked, this is endurance is there. There were times last year. I mean, if you really watch the third and fourth quarter of games, and Frank Clark said, pull up the film from last year. He was winded and tired and just not capable of being a factor late in games. And that was something where I think he really shined in 19, where he was that closer. And I think he noticed that. And it also seems, and I'm, he didn't really allude to this, but I also think there were some off the field things where I think he wanted to be a better person also by cutting out alcohol. And he looks great. I mean, really great for, I don't know if he looks great as like this big, bulky football player that you're supposed to be, but he looks great for like a friend that was maybe overweight and lost a lot of weight. And you're like, God, you look tremendous. Like that. It's that type of description. I don't know if that will necessarily translate to being a top defensive end in the NFL, but I think he's put himself in a position to have this comeback season. Now, what does a comeback season look like? He says he wants 10 or more sacks, which I appreciate him for. I don't know if that's in the cards, but I'll tell you what. I believe in him more now than I have maybe since that Derrick Henry game in the Super Bowl, which has been a long time. You know, that, what is that? You know, you're talking about 2020. It's now 2022 in August. So like since the pandemic started, I think Frank Clark has looked the best he's looked, and there's added motivation, like bettering your life for your family, losing weight, feeling better is one thing. We just saw defensive ends, even in their older ages, paid this past offseason. So there is I know he's signed for two more years, I believe, in Kansas City with the restructured deal, but there's still added motivation that maybe he's in for another payday a little bit later into his career. So I like what's happening with Frank Clark. Call me crazy. Roll your eyes. I've fallen for it. I mean, I have. I'll admit it. And I am rooting for him. After that press conference the other day, he was really candid with us, which is not something that you can always say at these things. And so I'm loving up on some Frank Clark right now. I'm sorry to say it. I am. I can't help it.
Well, there'll be a lot of fans that will think you're crazy. I mean, I don't think I'm telling you something you don't know.
Right.
A lot of people have given up on him already, gave up on him a long time ago, and will never change their minds about him. Okay. I get it. But I think you're making a good point, Pete, that, you know, even if he makes just a somewhat of a climb out of the cellar, that's a victory for him at mm-hmm. this point in his career. You know, I don't think there's a lot of chance that the Chiefs are going to keep him on for another year. He would have to have a spectacular season for the Chiefs to want to pay him what they would have to pay him next year
right.
on the contract he now has. I think they're going to be a lot more inclined to let him go at the age he'll be and with the baggage that he carries with him, et cetera. So really this is a contract year for him.
Right.
If he comes out and plays pretty well, he'd have a chance to grab a $5 million, $10 million contract with another team for another year or two.
Right.
And that'd be a win for him. And I agree that where he's at right now, physically and the way he's talking, it's a really nice setup for somewhat of an improvement in 2021. And honestly, if we get somewhat of an improvement out of Frank Clark and get some production from Carlos Dunlap and get a little production from George Karlaftis, the defensive line will be in pretty good shape, if you ask me. So
Carlos Dunlap, by the way, supposed to come to Kansas City on Wednesday. I think taking care of some personal matters. So we are looking forward to his debut at practice, which is just another guy that can help fill in the defensive end room. And I don't know. I'm starting to feel better about this room than I had been. Carlos Dunlap was a big help in that. I think they definitely needed another veteran at that position who you really feel good about. But even these younger guys, I see a Mike Dana, and you know, he's talking about a career year and wanting that 5 or 6 sacks. You get the opportunity in Steve Spagnuolo's room because everybody plays. And so I just like the vibe of this room right now. That's another thing, I think, bonus thing, I think. Okay.
You know, I think you can make an argument that for quite a while now, Carlos Dunlap was the right guy to get.
Yeah.
You know, even maybe going back to the time that all those expensive free agents were available.
Yeah.
You could make the argument that he was the guy the Chiefs should have been targeted because he had a lot of production, but not very much cost, which was going to be an issue for the Chiefs almost no matter what happened, and especially the way things fell out. So
this is a theme of good vibes in Kansas City too. Think Terrell Suggs and MV Pinnell, Mike Pinnell coming out. You need one of those guys that is just a little bit of that seasoning, right? You know, cumin? Sometimes you just need a little bit of that. You stir it up. And that's the secret sauce.
More about cumin on the Arrowhead Pride Editor's Show. I love it. Excellent.
Yeah. Maybe a little basil.
The salad on the show.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right. Point nine. I think Willie Gay Jr., if you saw this video the other day that Aaron Ladd put out, who does great work for us in 41, KSHB 41, where Willie Gay picks it off in 7-on-7 and runs all the way back and starts pumping up the crowd. I think he's comfortable. I think he's found some comfort. You know, talk about off the field things. I think he's mentally in a better place. I think he's playing loose. And I think he's going to have quite a few interceptions this year because he seems to be not thinking as much, which we saw maybe at the beginning of his career. And I just think he's become one with the defense, one with his will position. I think he's going to be really good in coverage. And I think he's going to surprise a lot of quarterbacks by picking the ball off. And if Willie Gay is picking the ball off, then, you know, you have Patrick Mahomes in this good offense starting at better positions on the field, and that can only lead to more points. So I'm high on Willie Gay. I think I'm high on Willie Gay Jr. right now.
Well, and also more interceptions means more of an opportunity for Tommy Townsend to have the lowest number of punts in the league, which I know a lot of people are hoping for. So every interception reduces the potential punts by one. So that's a good thing.
And I think a lot of the Chiefs have been going for it a lot more on fourth down than they have. I think it's got to be in Andy Reid's history just because of potent offense. So, all right. So I gave you 5 offense. I gave you 4 defense. And then here's my just general thing that I'm thinking as I've been around the team every day in and day out. I think generally speaking, with Brown Jr. now in the mix, some of that weird Bieniemy stuff behind us from the offseason, Nagy has found, I think, a nice rapport with Pat again, and you're starting to feel good about the coaching staff. And Tyreek Hill, who apparently was disgruntled and not a great locker room guy, he's now gone from the team and in Miami. So, again, Brown in the mix, Bieniemy stuff behind you, Tyreek gone. I think the locker room is in a place where it hasn't really had this feel-good feel in a long time, and I think it's ripe for once Brown gets settled in, I think you're going to really get some good vibes around this team, and especially if you start winning games early with how, you know, difficult we have said that first part of the schedule is. I think you're going to be in a situation where we have seen, and I'll admit it, and I never thought I'd be admitting this, but we've seen a lot of national disrespect for about the Chiefs, but I think it's just ripe for this team to surprise a lot of people, go on a tear early, and you're going to see a flip of the switch where people start to say, like sometimes what they say about the Yankees, you know, when they start to get good, oh, the Yankees are back. I think they might say that about the Kansas City Chiefs and say, oh, we should not have been sleeping and disrespecting this team. This team looks really, really good. And I think a lot of that comes from just the locker room and the feel around this team, now that a few of those things have taken place.
Well, now that we have some of that out of the way, maybe all that's needed to get them over the top is some Randy Reed. You know, that's get right. The coach's brother on the field and get some of that comedy going and you know, the good feelings go on. I was really kind of, I don't know that I would say surprised by the remarks themselves, but I was surprised how vehemently Travis Kelce spoke of Orlando Brown as a team leader today.
You've seen that though, and they're doing it for, you know, the teammate, but you've heard that a little bit from Pat and Creed, and Trey Smith did that a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. I was surprised to hear that too, but I do think it comes down to, and this is smart about players don't get involved in other players' money things. So they're
right.
So in their mind, that stuff doesn't exist. So they're just thinking back to last year, and perhaps Brown was this guy that they really did look to as a locker room juice guy and a leader. Yeah, who are we to say, right? Mm. I mean, we're not in the locker room, so I didn't expect that either, but it really does seem like the team is getting some juice from Brown finally being back in the building, and we will see if he's on the practice field starting on Tuesday, John.
I'm curious about this. Now that all this COVID stuff is behind us, and we presume the locker rooms will be open after the games. And
yes, that's the presumption right now, yes.
Go back in there. Do you think we'll get a better read on this kind of stuff going forward than we have the last couple of years? Because it's just been a complete mystery up to this point. I know from my years in the locker room post-game, you could kind of get a read on locker room was going just from what happened after the games. And do you think we'll get a better idea about those things going forward?
We'll definitely have a much better idea about the happenings of this team. And I'll give you an example of something that happened during COVID. Remember, like, Ricky Seals-Jones was on this team? And Ricky Seals-Jones has gone on to be a pretty good role player elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
He just didn't make it in Kansas City. And we didn't really have any idea what was going on with him. Where I think if locker rooms had been open at that point, someone could go up to Ricky and be like, Ricky, what's the deal here? Right.
Right.
You just haven't gotten those opportunities. So I think we'll know a lot more when it comes to those aspects of the team. And when you put all those aspects together, you start to get a feel for the locker room. So I think a roundabout way of saying, yes, I agree with you. And for what it's worth, and this is just a note for you, we've been told that it is back to the pre-COVID energy of being able to be in the locker room after games and during the week even as well. So we'll see how that changes what, you know, we find out about this team, how much we know about this team. And I think that's a good thing. I mean, I think the NFL is a lot more fun when you are able to get those details and really understand the fabric of a team. And I think through COVID, for obvious reasons and safety reasons, we weren't able to do that. And so now the NFL believes it's in a place where they can safely do it. And again, we'll keep you updated throughout the year. Another great way to plug. Thank you, John.
Well, you know, I was thinking about what I was saying about Dick Vermeil earlier is that he was always very open if you caught him in a unpublic place about what was going on. Right. And, you know, a lot of times we get information from these players and these coaches that we don't make public, you know, because it came to us in an unguarded mode. I can think of a couple of times I was on the elevator with Vermeil and had conversations with him, and he would tell me something, and that informed my reporting, not in a way that I could say went back to that conversation, but it helped me understand what was going on and then describe it accurately to people on the outside. And I'm sure that's been something that's been missing the last couple of years, when every utterance we get from anybody on the team is in a public setting through a Zoom conference call.
Right.
And,
right.
And so I'm very excited about maybe learning more about what's going on with the team during this coming season.
Big news of the day yesterday was Orlando Brown Jr. Reporting to camp. He'll be practicing on Tuesday, I believe, will be his first day of practice. He'll dive right in. I imagine they'll probably ease him in a little bit, but no acclimation period. He goes right into pads and shows up and goes right into pads.
Yeah, no, I think that was his plan probably, right? I had predicted, I think, on even on the pod saying that he's probably going to show up as soon as they're done at St. Joe, right? As soon as they report back to Kansas City where they don't have to stay in the dorms, all that. Well, I think he just wanted to wait for the pads maybe, you know, why mess around with these unpadded practices, his sitting out in that heat, you know, sweating for no reason. Why can't hit anybody, right? Maybe that was his thought process.
I don't know if it was long enough to feel like they made their point and they can show up, or if it really just was like, there's no point in me being here until we're actually hitting somebody, so now I can show up.
Yeah.
Either way, Brown is in town, and it'll be go time for the Chiefs' full offensive line. Now we can start paying attention to the right side instead of the left side when it comes to camp practices. Also, newly signed Carlos Dunlap will be reporting to the team on Wednesday, practicing on Thursday, so you get a new look at the defensive line rotation when he shows up. Hopefully that's a good boost to that group, and they're able to rotate those guys maybe a little more than we thought that they would be able to going into the season.
Yeah, and that's one thing I want to make sure to preface this whole show with is, you know, the OLDL stuff, guys, that's this week is when it really starts, where you can really get some observations in at training camp. And I didn't really pay attention to much, you know, Saturday in that respect. I mean, no pads. I mean, it's hard to really take away much. But now that Brown and Dunlap are going to be there next time I'm there, check in next week. I'll definitely have some OLDL takes, a lot stronger takes in that department.
You bet. My DMs are full of clips of OLDL one-on-ones and highlight reels, and I love it. It's good time. We've seen some fun stuff there, and I know we'll get to a lot of that as we go through your questions. Injury news, Jody Fortson left on the front of the cart the other day, which, you know, obviously is a lot better than the back of the cart. He is out there walking around today, not practicing, but it looked like he was doing okay. Andy Reid was very clear that this is a minor deal. He'll be back in a few days.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about Jody maybe a little later, potentially, depending on some of these questions. But I will say right now that's your tight end too, going off the field on the cart, because he's looking really good at camp, man. I think Jody's he's definitely looking like the second best tight end in my eyes. So that's more than just a backup tight end, or, you know, a third or fourth tight end getting, you know, going off the cart. So he's a big, that's a big time news.
And I assume they'll be cautious with him because he has come on so strong. He did pick up right where he left off. They're going to give him the full veteran treatment and say, hey, we don't need you out there re-injuring yourself. Hopefully he can stay healthy though, because that is going to be the big question now, coming off of a lost season or lost most of the season.
Yeah,
having another leg injury. All right, we don't want to slap that injury-prone label on him too soon. So hopefully that's a short-term thing. The shortest-term injury of all, I think, was Patrick Mahomes. Got his foot stepped on. Let everybody sweat a little bit more than they already were, but was right back in action. Sounds like that was no big deal.
Yep, sure sounds like it. Yeah, I'm glad it turned out to be nothing, Stags. It was scary for about 2 seconds when I first got the notification, but it seemed to be okay.
Well, we got tons of questions, and a lot of them carried on some of the big themes of what you expect to see in training camp. One of the things that always jumps out to me is you hear more about wide receivers in training camp than I think any other position in football. It's definitely, you know, more than the linemen, more than the quarterbacks even, I think. So the Chiefs wide receivers have been the story of camp, it seems to me, and a lot of them. So we'll jump right in with Mark Morin's question. He says, we're hearing plenty of positive news. Sky Moore, Juju Smith-Schuster, MVS. Is Josh Gordon showing anything that would indicate that he would make the team? And he also notes that Justin Watson looks like a guy that could make the team because of his special teams ability. I saw he finally made a couple plays in camp today. So is there a candidate that might take away that fifth or sixth wide receiver spot from Gordon or Watson?
Well, before I get into the talk about the new receivers, the guys, the more Juju and MBSs, we'll answer Mark Morin's question, because when I was there Saturday, I saw a lot of Darius Fountain playing with those first team reps with Patrick Mahomes. Fountain was that guy besides the top four, and then Justin Watson seemed to be that fifth guy that I saw getting reps receivers with the offense.
Now, that's not a name we've heard much about this football season.
I know. Last preseason, he was everyone's darling. He had a great preseason, had a few really highlight catches. He plays that X position. You know, he's a typical X, and that's what he was playing on the field Saturday. And, yeah, you know, you're talking about Josh Gordon, who I have said on this podcast, it sounded like he has momentum to make the roster this year. I didn't see him playing with Mahomes much at all. And I know early in camp, you're getting a lot of rotations. You're kind of seeing where guys fit in. So, you know, I don't want to, you know, make this the end-all be-all, but I definitely, you know, Fountain was definitely getting a lot more time with Mahomes in the first team offense rotating in than, you know, Gordon, Powell. I mean, any of the guys you can name besides the top four and Justin Watson.
So you're saying the top four are locked in. Justin Watson, are you seeing him as a lock?
Yeah. Yes. You know, I kind of am at this point. He was the other guy that was playing a lot. I mentioned with like as Fountain. Watson was going in motion a lot. He was the motion man quite a bit. I noticed, which was kind of cool to see. He's kind of a rare combination, a little bit of size and speed that I think the Chiefs are going to like. And I think he's going to kind of be that Marcus Kemp role, right? Where like they might throw him in a receiver sometimes, but he's a really good special teams player. And I do see him as wide receiver five right now. It seemed that was like pretty clear to me, honestly.
That's interesting. I think that's news. I mean, he is a little bit of a hot name this offseason, but Fountain definitely was not so much. Josh Gordon, are you just not seeing a lot from him at all, or have you seen some miscues?
Well, no, I just didn't really see him with the Mahomes-led offense. When he did get on the field, I didn't see any production from him, to be honest with you. But that was just Saturday. You know, I'm only there one day. You know, there's definitely other opportunities for him to get, but you know, it does just seem like right now, whatever momentum he had from OTAs, all the hype we may have heard potentially, you know, maybe it's just not as strong as maybe previously thought. Maybe that was more, us kind of hoping maybe more than, you know, the team actually telling us that he's going to be maybe a part of this offense this year.
Fair enough. Well, Just a Dreamer points out or asks a question about Sky Moore, and he's a name that we've heard a lot about all of a sudden. Like, he wasn't talked about through OTAs and mandatory mini camp, and then all of a sudden, now that he's at St. Joe, it seems like Sky Moore is making plays left and right. The question here from Just a Dreamer is, do you see him effective on the outside and not just in the slot? What do you think about Sky Moore and position-wise and performance-wise so far?
Yeah, you know, I went up there kind of wanting to be skeptic a little bit because I think people maybe have just been getting excited about a rookie that, you know, we haven't seen yet, you know, maybe just, you know, kind of a confirmation bias almost in some instances. I don't know, man. He looks pretty dang good. I know there wasn't pads on Saturday, but just his route running, you know, how smooth he is in and out of his breaks. There's a specific play, where he separates from Legarius Sneed over the middle. And I just think he was so smooth out of his break and so, you know, he's kind of one of those players that doesn't look as fast maybe as he actually is, right? Because he's so smooth. And I think it catches Sneed off guard. And I think that's what you're going to see in the NFL is he has that kind of movement that's going to catch people off guard, and it's going to give him those angles in the open field and different, you know, on routes. So all that to say, I absolutely do see how he could, you know, be an outside receiver and a slot receiver. I think at first, obviously, when you have these kind of bigger receivers that can take out on the perimeter jobs, you know, Sky will definitely be, you know, at his best in the slot as a rookie, I would think. But that's where I want to just say real quick, man, his emergence, you know, it's going to be tough for everyone to get the ball here. And if Sky really earns some targets, man, that's where someone like Mecole Hardman, you know, he's really led that hype train for him. I'm kind of getting worried, man. I really thought he'd be that kind of the most experienced player in the offense and maybe kind of leading the receiver group. But I'm kind of getting worried that we're going to see a pretty defined role from Mecole once again, as he's kind of maybe the complement around the other three receivers being kind of the truly difference makers in the offense.
Before we get too far into Mecole, back to Sky, I really do remember the pre-draft process. What did you see about Sky that you liked? Because I remember that it was the way he got in and out of his breaks and the releases he had off of the line that made it interesting, because there's some things that translate from college to pros and some things that don't. Sometimes your go up and get it big receivers in college don't separate enough to be good in the pros, yeah, right? Yeah. What to me always seems to translate are guys that are great route runners and guys that catch the ball really well, as far as hands catchers, right? So those are things that we saw in Sky, and maybe we just underestimated him a little bit.
Yeah, I definitely think I did. It's a learning lesson for me as an evaluator. You're right, Stags. I do think something you can count on translating is if you have very technical footwork, if you have good fundamentals, releasing off the line of scrimmage. I mean, it does go a long way, and we've already seen some clips of and I saw it in person of Sky really being fundamentally sound in terms of how to deconstruct, a coverage right off the line. So I'm really excited about Sky, man. I think so far he's looked really good. And again, something I've always said with him is, oh, well, all these other mouths to feed. Well, man, if he's this impressive, someone else is going to have to go down in that pecking order. And it just feels like it makes sense for it to be McColl. And he might still just be in that gadgety role rather than being a true receiver once again, which, I know he doesn't want to be that anymore, right, Sags? I doubt he does.
Back to Chiefs training camp. Now, we touched on it briefly about Isaiah Pacheco, but is there anybody else who's really kind of standing out for you at the minute? I know we hear a lot of the reports from Arrowhead Pride, and Pete Sweeney's given us some great, great details about that. Keep up the great work, Pete, because we really thrive on this stuff from Chiefs training camp. I'd love to go one day. I really would love to go one day, but I don't think I could stump up the cash just to get over just for a training camp. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's for me, but...
That'd be a tough sell.
It would be a tough sell, wouldn't it? Yeah. But is there anybody really kind of popping out for you and somebody that you thought, I wasn't really particularly excited about that player before, but right now I have to look at them?
It's Sky Moore.
Sky Moore, yeah.
It's Sky Moore. I expected him to be good. And I think everyone expected him to be good. I think it's his pair. It's a pair between Sky Moore and Juju.
I was going to say Juju.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was going to say Juju and Sky Moore. Like, I fully expected Juju to be great anyway.
I didn't.
But he's kind of gone up a gear. It's like, I expected Sky Moore to be good and he's been great. I was expecting Juju to be great and he's been phenomenal. Yeah. Like, they've both exceeded my expectations and they're both making me feel a lot better about the wide receiver room. We've talked about the depth. We don't need to go into that again. We expected the depth to be better, but we didn't know whether the talent at the top of the room was going to be as good as we've seen. And obviously that was a cause for concern. But what we have seen in this first week are two receivers in them two that are just showing up in like the biggest of way. And you want to make an impression early in camp, and them two, Sky Moore, the rookie, Juju, the guy looking to revitalize his career. And the pair of them have just been excellent. Really good, really encouraging from what I've seen.
The connection, I think, already that Mahomes is building up with Juju is something to take note of.
It's that Madden 19 cover, the connection. That's all it is. That's all it is.
Yeah, the wide receiving core. I'm feeling a lot better now, and I'm obviously forgetting about that previous wide receiver that we had before. I'm forgetting his name now. But I feel a lot better now that the wide receiving core is kind of tight as it is, really. I just think it's competitive. I can't remember the last time the Chiefs had a really competitive wide receiving core. Probably when Sammy Watkins was there, but there was not really anybody who was going to be kind of pushing him even further, was there, for that. At least Sky Moore is like pushing, the already established players on the team, MVS and Juju, and making sure that he is at least considered to be starting this year.
You make an excellent point there. You make it like, I'm going through it in my head and I can't, like, are we talking Jeremy Maclin and Tyreek Hill in his rookie year? Is that the last time that we had two genuine, but even to Tyreek Hill in his rookie year wasn't like exactly a well-beaten wide receiver. He kind of grew into that role. as the years went on. When was the last time the Chiefs had at least two number two wide receivers? It was Sammy Watkins, maybe Sammy Watkins, but hardly on the field. So, but this, the Chiefs are going to go into the season with their number one being Travis Kelce, and then potentially MVS, Juju, and Sky Moore, three number two wide receivers. And when was the last time we had that type of depth? We haven't had that type of depth under Andy Reid. He inherited Donny Avery and Dwayne Bowe. They were his two guys originally. Then we rolled with Dwayne Bowe for far too long.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was Macklin. Who did Macklin have as a partner? And was it, he didn't have anyone until Tyreek Hill come along. Then Macklin went. And who's Tyreek Hill had as a partner? No one until Sammy Watkins come along.
Sammy Watkins. And like you said, he was hardly playing.
Yeah. And that was when we were a team that didn't really like throwing the ball that much. With the Tyreek Hill early years.
The beauty of this is, though, is we can actually throw somebody in the slot and not be worried about it.
In what
sense?
We've
got two wide receivers there that we could throw into we could throw somebody into the slot there, no problem. And I'd be more than happy now having somebody as a slot receiver adding the wide receivers and be quite confident that
who would you like? Well, who's going to be your slot guy? Were you putting a big body in there? Or are you going to put your Sky Moore? I would put
Sky Moore in.
So are we looking at Sky Moore to be like the Wes Welker of the Chiefs offense, the chain mover? Like Wes Welker basically made that position.
Yeah,
like the slot receiver was a position, but he was the guy. He was the guy that made it for like small players, the nifty small players. And we've seen players do it. We've seen Tyreek Hill do it. Yeah. Wes Welker do it. There has been these smaller wide receivers has come in and move chains, and then for the quick, easy throws, is Sky Moore now that guy?
Could be. I mean, but then again, who do you put on the outside?
Well, you put MVS or Juju.
Well, yeah.
Or McColl.
Or will McColl be that slot guy? Because he's played there before, hasn't he?
I don't want to see McColl in a slot. I don't think McColl Hardman runs good enough routes to play in the slot.
Did you see him in Chiefs camp against Joshua Williams?
Yeah, fair point. But I'm going to go more off what we've seen in the actual game for the last three or four seasons. Like McColl is improving. He is improving. But to me, it already seems like Sky Moore is a far more technical route runner than what we've ever seen from McColl Hardman. And in from the slot, you have to get the dirty yards. And that's where you have to be a really good route runner. You have to be a technician. That's why Travis Kelce's so good in there. That's why he goes lined out on the slot. Sometimes he goes out there on his own because he can win in the short to intermediate situations where he can just shake a guy off, get open, catch a pass first down. And if we're in a position where we've got Sky Moore and Travis Kelce there, then with like maybe like Juju or MVS on the outsides, Jarrett McKinnon and Isaiah Pacheco, Clyde coming out the backfield, then options are endless. Like the Chiefs, if they can adopt a fourth down approach, similar to like, I hate saying it, like Chargers approach, if they can become that type of aggressive, then show that type of aggression, then with the receivers that the Chiefs have and the players that they have to do the damage early in the slots, in Sky Moore, in Travis Kelce, then there should be no reason to ever see, I was about to say Dustin Colquitt, to see Tommy Townsend ever again.
That you make a good point, actually. I never actually really considered actually using the likes of Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the passing game, but
you've never considered that. You've brought it up about a million times.
No. I've considered it. But why are we not doing it? But I've never actually thought about it in this offense, because I thought we've got so many now wide receivers that, you know, even the tight ends, you know, Jody Fortson's another one who's a brilliant, brilliant receiver. But we've also got the added extra. I'd love to see the Chiefs use Clyde Edwards-Helaire like Jamaal Charles was used.
That's a tough ask.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's not going to be Jamaal Charles, but what I mean is, like, you remember that Raiders game where it was just literally, you know.
Yeah, that was just screen pass, wasn't
it? Exactly, but I mean, it worked.
Yeah.
I mean, look at like Jamaal Charles, like what he did in that game. He destroyed the Raiders.
Yeah, but that same offense was also led by Alex Smith and had Dwayne Bowe and Donny Avery as their lead wide receivers.
Yeah, and they still couldn't match it up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So I like to think that Andy Reid is better in 2022 than trying to rely on a passing game for running back to move the team. I do feel like they will do it. I do think it will happen on occasions. Yeah. But I'm still firmly of the belief that you have Patrick Mahomes, you have this quarterback, you've now given him a plethora of weapons to throw the ball to. You've got two guys that can win inside, outside, and Travis Kelce, Sky Moore. Then let's use them as opposed to giving the ball to Clyde Edwards-Helaire and hoping that we finally see the Clyde Edwards-Helaire from LSU.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Life moves pretty fast. Are you drinking water that can keep up? Smartwater Alkaline has everything you need to stay hydrated, no matter where your day takes you. Whether you're pitching a tent or your next big idea, Smartwater Alkaline can help you perform your best. It delivers a pure, crisp taste that makes it the perfect chaser after a big workout. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Anyway, man, let's get into these Chiefs. Obviously, training camp has been underway for over a week now, roughly. Yours truly, I mean, well, not me, but that's you. You've been on the ground enduring the heat, the humidity out there in St. Joe with your camera and over your shoulder and your mic in your other hand, getting viral footage. You got the footage of Sky Moore's injury, which wasn't a big deal. You're getting Orlando Brown with Brett Veach. And we're going to start there with Orlando Brown. Obviously, he's reported to camp now, so everybody can take a deep breath. And before I get to you, man, I know we were talking about this on a lot of the previous shows, and we were kind of predicting when he may come. I think we both agreed that he wasn't going to miss any games, but I'm sure you probably are on the same thought process as me here. I'm surprised he returned this early. I mean, I'm absolutely stunned. I thought he was going to wait a little bit. You know, who wants to go to St. Joe right now? You know, it's so hot out there. Why not just work out with your own personal guy, maybe come for the first or second preseason game? So I'm shocked he came this early, but I'm happy. I mean, it's great because he came when the pad started. He talked about how it's important for him and Andy Reid and the guys those first 5 days in pads. So it shows the ultimate commitment. And obviously, I mean, the main thing for me is, and I've said this before, he doesn't have much leverage here. Him sitting out does nothing. The deadline's already passed. You're going to play on the tag. And the longer you wait, you know, you may lose some leverage, right? If somebody steps in, they perform pretty well. They're like, oh, we don't even need you that much. So it was imperative for him to come back. But I'm surprised it happened this early.
Yeah, we're on the same page with that. I got the alert, and I almost couldn't believe it. It was the first day of pads, so we know it was an important day for Kansas City. But he comes in and practices in that second day, and he looked fine. It looked like he had slimmed down a little bit from what he showed up at camp last year. And there were some pictures kind of going around Chiefs Twitter. He mentioned that, hey, you know, I've been doing work. I haven't just been sitting all behind. Like, I actually been staying in shape and that kind of thing. But Marquise missed a lot of ball, man. It's not just training camp. Orlando Brown wasn't present for any of the earlier offseason activities as well. I think about mini camp at the team facility. Orlando Brown wasn't present. We're still asking the same questions. So for him to show up, and he kind of spoke to this when talking with reporters after practice, he said, I know how important this 5-day stretch is to Coach Reed. And when we talk about a violent sport, a physical sport, and a position that Orlando Brown plays in the trenches, he's got to jump back in and kind of fit in seamlessly with that offensive line. I'm surprised it happened as early as it did, but it's definitely a sight for sore eyes for Chiefs Kingdom.
Yeah, absolutely. And what are your thoughts on this quote? This is a quote that's kind of been circulating around Chiefs Twitter, and people are calling Cap, obviously, when he said, I want to finish the rest of my career here in Kansas City. And then, you know, he went on to say, it's not about the money.
You're asking what I think about that?
If you can't speak on it, it's okay. Because you have to actually deal with this guy. I forgot about that.
And here's what I'll say about the Orlando Brown situation. The Chiefs were kind of being sneaky with it. They were like, "Oh, he's acclimating, so he might be out there, but he might not talk to y'all right away. It's all part of the process." And then, like right before media availability started, they were like, "Oh, by the way, Orlando Brown's coming down." I thought he took it on the chin. I thought he knew. I mean, obviously they had him prepped and ready to go, and I'm sure any PR professional told him this is what you should expect. But, he openly admitted he felt like there weren't enough guarantees in the deal. He didn't give any specifics, but we've all seen the number that's kind of been floating around there, 6 years, 139. But it's kind of funny money, Mark. You know this, man. The Chiefs could have got out of that reported contract after 2 years, and Orlando Brown is sitting there with no security. He said, there's no hard feelings. Obviously, that video of him and Brett Veach kind of made the rounds a little bit, but I thought that was just – that just kind of showed where the two parties are right now, man. A contentious negotiation, both sides probably upset with how it turned out. But, you get back under one umbrella, you get back on the same page, and you're back to addressing what the topic at hand or what the goal at hand is, and that's trying to play in Arizona in February.
Yeah, and speaking of February, he said he's here to win Super Bowls, and that's all he cares about. And, he sounds like he's dedicated and he's ready to go.
It is a little cap. We can go ahead and admit that. I mean, a lot of times when players say stuff, you kind of have to read between the lines. But what is Orlando Brown supposed to say in that situation? I mean, he admitted where he felt like the shortcomings were with the deal, and then he said, I didn't feel right sitting at home. I'm here now. No hard feelings. I'm ready to roll. I felt like that was an honest. I don't care about money is something that players say all the time, and it's probably something we have all said in our professional lives. Oh, I just want to do something that makes me happy. I don't care about the money, but that matters. It matters, man. We know that matters. The fact that he's here, that was more important than a lot of the stuff that he ended up saying.
Yeah, it definitely matters, and what obviously is going to matter even more is his play this year, right? Because this is a proving year. I mean, if he goes out there and looks like a top five, top 10 left tackle, undeniably, the Chiefs have a lot of success offensively, and he's a big part of that. He's going to have a lot of leverage heading to the offseason. And now the Chiefs are going to have to make a decision, right? Are you going to give up that bag? Because he's going to demand a lot of money if he plays good this year. Like I said before, left tackle is arguably the second most important position in football behind quarterback because you're protecting the quarterback's blind side. So we'll see, man. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm excited to see that he looks a little slimmer. Should help him against those speed rushers that really gave him a lot of problem last year. Because he was actually really good in run blocking. He struggled in pass protection at times. He got better as the season went on, obviously. But a lot of that has to do with him also coming from Baltimore, which is a very heavy run system. Coming to Kansas City, obviously, is the complete opposite. So it took time to adjust from completely opposite schemes.
I'm not sure there's any position on the roster right now that is more fluid than what we're watching at corner, at least when it comes to the starting spot. I think most of the starter roles are pretty established at this point in time. I don't know who that third corner is going to be in the nickel right now. We know that at one spot it's going to be McDuffie. Another spot is going to be L'Jarius Sneed. Most of camp, it seems like Joshua Williams has been that third guy. Today, it was Jalen Watson, a rookie that was there as well. Rashad Fenton, at some point, we don't know when exactly, is going to be coming back from the PUP. I wouldn't say I'm concerned about the cornerback spot yet, but I'm cautiously pessimistic on what we're seeing from the group. I'm very curious to see what it looks like going into these preseason games where they're having live bullets against real wide receivers, especially against Washington when you're going up against Terry McLaurin. That's going to be the one that I'm very curious to see what this group looks like.
I mean, I'm not feeling good about Trent McDuffie right now. I mean, everything that I know everybody's always trying to play catch up on training camp. Like, part of my job is to just make sure I know what's going on, even if I'm not on the ground at Chiefs training camp. So I'm following these storylines all day, every day. And there has been very little positive response about Trent McDuffie so far in training camp. But I do think that some of it, and I agree with you, he's locked in. He is a starting cornerback. And I think that's part of it, is that Spags is just kind of throwing him to the fire, because if it were up to Spags, he doesn't like deploying rookies this fast, but they don't really have a choice this season. So Spags is just like, okay, you just got to dive in. Like, you just got to learn it. It's a lot of this hinges on Rashad Fenton, because when we saw Rashad Fenton last season, we talked about it a ton. He was a really good player for them. He has been a really good player for them when he's gotten a lot of playing time, and he's been a really underrated player that hasn't gotten enough credit over the last couple of seasons for how well he's played for them. But he's missed a lot of time now, and I don't know if that's coming to an end anytime soon. You know, Andy Reid said this week, just, oh, he's progressing. You know, he's doing well. We're hoping to get him back on the field soon, which is like what they've been saying for months. So I don't know when Fenton's going to come back, but I would have to imagine he's going to be the other starting corner with a mix of Joshua Williams, because I do think that the hype around him is real. I think that he can be a really good player for them. Again, though, I don't think Spags under any circumstance wants to deploy two rookies in his starting secondary come week one of the season, but they might not have a choice. But Joshua Williams,
What's the other option?
Yeah, it's Joshua Williams. At least he's got the length and size, and he's shown that he knows how to use it. And so I am excited about him as a player, because I think he could wind up being a really, really good developmental player for them. But yeah, I'm not super optimistic that it's going to be great early in the season, because it is trending that way, that there's going to be two rookie cornerbacks in their secondary starting week one of the NFL season. And I think those guys have upside and they have talent, but that's not where you want to be come week one.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of, I think it was like 2018, 19, one of those two. I think it was 18 when we first saw Charvarius Ward in the secondary, right? And it took like 8, 9, 10 weeks to get to that point. And then he played against Seattle and was like, oh boy, this is not good. But he was in the right position every single time that they threw the ball. They just threw it deep, went over his head. He wasn't able to come down with it, didn't make a play on the ball, and then gave up a ton of yards as a result. That was late in the season, because they tried the veterans first. They didn't really have that option this time around. It's going to be one of Joshua Williams, Nazee Johnson, Jalen Watson, like one of those three guys, at least the way that things are trending right now, is almost certainly going to be starting week one. And when you're going up against the Cardinals and then the Chargers and the Colts and the Bucs and the Raiders and the Bills and the 49ers, you've got some good wide receivers early in the season, man. This is not an easy schedule to just be like, okay, yeah, it's going to be fine. We've got rookie corners starting on both sides of things here. No, those guys better be ready to go, man, because you got some really good passing offenses early in the season and some good schemes as well that you're going to have to be going up against.
I know last week I said this is the best young secondary in football.
I forgot about that.
which, you know, I probably still believe that. I think there's a ton of upside in this unit. But yeah, it's when you look at the Chiefs' first 8 weeks of the season, like, it's not where you want to be week one. And it's if they can find a way to get Rashad Fenton back and he's ready to go come the first regular season game of the year, I'm going to feel a lot better about it, because I've seen Rashad Fenton do it. I've seen Rashad Fenton be a really consistent starting NFL cornerback for this defense, but it just doesn't seem like it's trending in the right direction. It just doesn't seem like there's been any progress there with him so far. So I think that's probably what's going to happen. And yeah, when you rattle off the offenses that they're playing against, like, those are some really good opposing wide receivers. That's not great. And then you start talking about the division and the wide receivers that are in this division. Like, it's going to be a problem, I think, early in the season, because those guys need to get some time. They need to learn, and that's why they don't like deploying these rookies right away, because Spags, the way he likes to play defense, he's like, yeah, I need you to play man coverage. I need you to man up and shut this guy down and make a play and make sure he doesn't run past you. And there's just not very many rookie cornerbacks in the NFL that are capable of doing that at a high level in their first regular season game.
In the first 7 weeks of the season, you'll see Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, Michael Pittman, Mike Evans, Devontae Adams, Stephon Diggs, Deebo Samuel, and oh, by the way, in week one, maybe, depending on how things go, probably Hollywood Brown as well. It's a murderer's row of wide receivers. And oh, by the way, the quarterbacks on all of those teams happen to be pretty darn good as well. If these guys aren't ready, it's going to be a problem. That's the group that I'm most interested in seeing, I think, in the preseason, is what you've got at cornerback. Because, like, wide receiver, you've got pros there. I know everybody's excited to see Sky Moore, but you've got pros there at the top end. Offensive line is basically what it was a year ago. I want to see what Isaiah Pacheco is, but as we mentioned earlier, I think he's a tertiary piece. I don't think he's a guy that's going to be a starting option for you. Defensive line, George Karlaftis, he'll be cool to see, but he's probably a backup going into the year. Linebackers, we know. Safeties, we know, are at least guys that have been there, done that before. We've never seen these corners, and two of them are going to be starting in week number one. If there is one unit that I'm most curious to see once we actually get into the preseason, it is 100% without a doubt these cornerbacks, and finding out, okay, where's Trent McDuffie at? And which of those other rookie corners is most likely to start opposite him in week one?
Yeah, we just have to get to game action. We just got to get to a preseason football and see these guys going against some opposing units and guys that are also competing to win and to get jobs and to get contracts and to find roles in an offense, because it's not the same right now. Like, right now, we've been hyping up the secondary and we've been hyping up the cornerbacks, and it's great that Joshua Williams and Jalen Watson and these young guys are making plays against those dudes in practice. It's just not the same thing. And so we could feel really good about it right now. And then once we're a month into the season, we could be like, oh, we have the worst cornerback group in football. like that's not an unrealistic possibility. I don't think that that's necessarily true. But when you're this young, there's going to be a lot of development. There's going to be a lot of growing pains. And, you know, I love L'Jarius Sneed. I think L'Jarius Sneed's a great player, but he's the only guy in that cornerback room that you're like, well, at least we don't have to worry about him. And that's not a good position to be in.
Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.